You know, we've seen Judge Kavanaugh broadly described as a Washington insider with a strong conservative record. Is that a fairly accurate assessment of him?
There's no question. I mean, he obviously has plenty of experience inside Washington. He had experience inside the White House. He's been on the District of Columbia Court of Appeals, and he is a very solid conservative jurist who I think is going to be very reliably conservative on all the major issues facing the court.
And this pick obviously seems to hold potential to have a much more substantial and lasting impact on the high court long term, because it replaces Justice Kennedy, often seen as a swing vote in many cases. How significantly do you feel a Justice Kavanaugh would shift the court?
Oh, there's no question. It's a major tectonic shift in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court. We've had a court that for almost all of my professional life as a lawyer and a law professor and law school dean has been very evenly divided, with three or four strong liberals on the court at any given moment, three or four strong conservatives on the court, and one or two people in the middle. And now for the first time in decades, for the first time since really before World War II, there will be five very strong, committed, highly intelligent conservative jurists on the court. And that will have potentially a dramatic impact on American life. And we've all heard the debates. It could easily result at some point in the future in overruling Roe v. Wade and abortion rights. I think that's the most likely major consequence. It, in my view, will likely at some point in the near future, if he's confirmed, end affirmative action in admissions at universities. Obviously, another very, very closely watched issue are matters relating to sexual orientation and same-sex marriage. It was a 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court of the United States, written by Justice Kennedy, that made same-sex marriage a constitutional right. It's not as clear to me that that is in peril. That is a tougher one, because there is a legal doctrine. It's got a Latin name. It's called stare decisis. Mm-hmm. It basically means that precedents should be adhered to, typically, and not overturned lightly. Of course, lower courts are absolutely bound to follow Supreme Court precedent. Lower courts have no discretion to disagree with the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court is not bound to respect its own precedents. It can overrule its own past rulings, but it shouldn't do so lightly. And one of the classic factors that a court will consider in deciding whether to overrule one of its past precedents is how disruptive the overruling would be. And my personal hope is that even if there are justices on the court who wouldn't have voted in favor of same-sex marriage in the first instance, we know there are four because they voted against it and they're on the court. Justice Gorsuch, let's assume, would vote the same way that Justice Scalia had. And let's imagine that Judge Kavanaugh is confirmed and he becomes the fifth vote. Still, those five justices will have to ask themselves, how disruptive to the country would this be? Because there have been all these marriages that have been already consummated, with people of the same gender. States have changed their rules. Society has settled into this new reality. And it would be, I think, very dislocating for us to turn back that clock. So I think it's possible same-sex marriage could survive a five-justice conservative majority in a way that abortion might not. Abortion doesn't have quite the same disruption of existing relationships as same-sex marriage does. Basically, I am saying that there would be a profound change in our constitutional law. Another point to keep in mind, and I think that I would expect Republican supporters to make this point as a positive. Democrats, I'm sure, will dismiss the point. It doesn't mean, if a five-justice conservative majority comes on, that every state will ban abortion. It doesn't mean that if, for example, there were new rules on same-sex marriage, every state would roll back the clock, but it would return those issues to the states. So on something like abortion, you might see 30 states that continue to allow it. You might see 20 states that ban it in various forms. And so we'd have a patchwork of different sets of legal rules. And something not many people talk about, but every state has a constitution. Mm-hmm. State Supreme Courts can interpret their own constitutions. And you might see some state Supreme Courts that would say, even if Roe v. Wade's been overruled under the federal constitution, we think it remains a fundamental right under our state constitutions. So what you're hearing from me, Tom, is that it would have a profound effect on the court, a more complex set of effects overall in our society, a much more state-by-state set of effects.
You mentioned some of these larger issues like abortion, same-sex marriage, affirmative action. Are there some lower profile issues that maybe people aren't thinking about but could have similarly widespread effects?
Yeah, so the court takes about 100 cases a year. And of those 100 cases, 7 or 8 make the news as blockbusters on big issues like religion or speech or race, presidential power. So what are the other 80 or 90 cases that the court takes? And the answer is that a large part of the court's diet involves the interpretation of federal statutes, federal laws, the actions of federal agencies that don't get that culture war sort of attention, but can have a giant effect on environmental matters, regulation of business, labor disputes, all sorts of things like that. And to the extent that those are interpreted in a more conservative manner, that will also impact the direction of our government in many ways.
How quickly might some of these issues wind up before the court? Will it take some time, or are there already cases in the pipeline on a lot of these issues that could be heard relatively quickly?
It will take some time. And so let's take abortion. First, you'll have to have states that take the cue and enact laws that in some ways severely restrict abortion or perhaps try to ban abortion entirely, except, for example, to save the life of the mother. Well, those laws will instantly be declared unconstitutional by lower courts because lower courts have no choice. But that litigation will take some time. And so it may take a year or two or three for that litigation to wind its way through. And then the Supreme Court itself has to decide how quickly it wants to take up an issue like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they want to let a few years pass and then finally do it, or maybe they're willing to do it immediately. It only takes 4 justices to vote to take a case. And so it's called the rule of 4. And so typically, if the 4 believe there's a 5th that would vote with them, they may be inclined to do it. Realistically, if we are asking when would Roe v. Wade likely be litigated and be before the Supreme Court, hard to believe it could be sooner than 2 years, let's say. Affirmative action, same sort of thing. You'd have to have a lawsuit brought challenging a university's affirmative action policies. There's actually a suit right now pending against Harvard in which Asian Americans are claiming that Harvard's affirmative action policies hurt Asian Americans. But it could be brought against some other university, more likely a public university than a private one. And again, it will take a year or 2 or 3 for that to work its way through lower courts. But at that point, after 2 or 3 years of litigation, the Supreme Court could easily take that and say, no, not anymore. It's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause and a violation of federal civil rights statutes for public or private universities to do it. So the answer is it won't happen overnight. It takes a while for the issue to be set up, and there has to be the will on the part of the court to take it. But within 2 or 3 years, I think we would start to see some profound changes.
Some have also pointed to Judge Kavanaugh's view on investigating a sitting president in a Minnesota Law Review article in 2009. He argued while he doesn't view the president above the law, investigations into the president could be a significant distraction, one that's unnecessary given Congress's ability to hold the president accountable via impeachment. With the ongoing Mueller investigation as a backdrop, how significant is this issue that's being raised by some folks?
I have to say that I'm not as persuaded that this is as significant. First of all, there's been a fairly broad scholarly consensus for quite some time that it's doubtful that you could indict a sitting president. So that position that the judge took as a scholar is not wildly out of what a lot of people believe, both liberals and conservatives, and quite possibly what some of the liberal justices on the Supreme Court believe about presidential power. So I don't think that that in itself is so striking. And then more generally with regard to presidential power, that is not an issue historically that divides so neatly along ideological lines in the way that we typically think of the court today. So it's not an area in which you can be sure how a conservative justice will vote or how a liberal justice could vote. Justice Scalia, for example, had very strong views involving separation of powers and was willing at times to write against the executive branch on matters. So to my view, that's in the mix. Because President Trump is so controversial, because people are so, there's such a divisiveness about his presidency, there's no question that Democrats will use that as one of the arguments to try to persuade one or two more moderate Republicans or one of the two independent senators to switch their way. But if you're just asking me as a constitutional law scholar, I don't see that as so obviously having a profound effect on the court.
Since you moved toward the confirmation process, what do you expect from that process in this particular case, considering, again, Judge Kavanaugh's conservative nature, and also there's still that kind of lingering bitterness, I think, with Democrats over the way Merrick Garland's nomination was handled?
There's no question. I mean, I believe, somewhat sadly for the country, but I believe it'll be one of the most divisive moments of modern times. It's really a perfect storm. We've not had the solid four conservatives and four liberals on the court with the tie vote in play in decades and decades and decades. And so there just has not been this moment in which it was so obvious that so much was at stake and that a major ideological divide was at stake. And so there's that part of it. There's the general tenor of divisiveness in the country on from both the left and the right. The protests at restaurants and so on in public places of members of against the Trump administration. There's just the huge polarization in our politics. And with the stakes so high, with the polarization in the country, with the closeness of the vote, even though it would be an uphill battle to defeat Judge Kavanaugh or to delay the vote until after the elections, in which case the Senate could perhaps swing to the Democratic side. There's so much at stake. There's so much opportunity to galvanize the base of the right and the base of the left over this issue. It's something voters really care about. Mm-hmm. So the midterm elections become a plebiscite on it. You've only got to get one or two votes to switch. I just see it as a battle royale. And I think there'll be day after day after day of very divisive hearings and very divisive debate in the Senate. And who knows what the timetable will be. Senator McConnell is determined to move it along and get it done before. Politics are unpredictable. We don't know what issue will come up as people look into his record. Who knows? If something were to come up and, the Democrats, the clock's on their side. They want to delay, try to run out the clock. So I think it'll be very divisive. And in a certain way, that's unfortunate. It's not, I don't think, good for the civility of the country, and it's not necessarily good for the rule of law and the respect for the court, because it makes the court look like just another political branch of government.
You mentioned his record. Does that factor into this as well in terms of the kind of paper trail that he has, both his judicial writings, his documents while he was working for the George W. Bush administration? Does that perhaps even maybe add fuel to the potential fire of such a hearing, having more to look at?
Well, the news reports are that Senator McConnell was a little wary of Judge Kavanaugh just because of the volume of the record. saying that's a lot of paper to go through. That's a lot of things to read. Who knows what anybody will find? You write 300 opinions. My goodness, there's going to be something there. I doubt anybody's read all 300 up to this point. The sheer volume of the paper record tends to work towards the process going more slowly, and obviously it creates the possibility of an embarrassment here or there. I don't know that there's anything there. What I think could easily happen is there'll be opinions that people find that reinforce the views of the left that we shouldn't have him, and that reinforce the views of the right that he's perfect. And so it may just be reinforce a lot of what we already know. The other thing I'll comment on is this seems hard to believe, but there was once a time in which quite a few folks in the country, including me, took the view we really should look at a person's credentials and not make every nomination a litmus test over ideology. And I guess nobody believes that anymore, because plainly Judge Kavanaugh has great credentials, great education, great experience on the bench, highly intelligent, seems like a good person. You can't argue that he's unfit intellectually or in terms of his legal competency. The only thing you can argue is we don't want these decisions, and I understand that, and probably everybody in the United States is going to pick one side or the other on that, but it is a little regretful that that picks for the Supreme Court of the United States are now so 100% politicized, at least when a swing vote is in play. When you're just substituting for somebody that's already on one side or the other, people may revert more to the civilized, is the person qualified, and so on. Justice Gorsuch got some of the benefit of that, but we won't see that this time around.
Dean Small, we appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Good to be with you, Tom.